Welcome to the LeanZone.com podcast, where we discuss construction contracts, liens, and bonds. And now, our host, Alex Barthet.
Okay, so let's talk about claims. A claim, so you understand, is anything on the job that you wish to complain about, and that is kind of, it's kind of a cousin to a time extension, but typically a claim is more money. So what do you have to remember? One, when is the time submitted for the claim? How much time do you have? And you should always limit your liability to the recovery from the owner as a contractor, right? So you want to say, you may have a claim against me, I'm only going to give you what I get from the owner. So let's take a look at a sample provision. You'll notice that it looks a lot like the provision that exists in the time extension. So it limits, it says you have to give me notice within a certain amount of time, and it says what's going to happen once that notice is received. Any and all claims for additional compensation or subcontractor time which subcontractor has against the contractor shall be made in writing no later than 72 hours from the first event giving rise to the claim. Any and all claims submitted shall be deemed waived. Any and all claims thereafter shall be deemed waived. Subcontractor recognizes that any and all timely submitted claims shall be submitted to the owner, and that the subcontractor's right to recover on any such claims is expressly contingent upon contractor receiving payment and or time extensions from the owner. Contractor shall have discharged its obligation to subcontractor with respect to the claim when contractor has paid and or given to subcontractor its pro rata share from any recoveries contractor may have received from owner for such claim. This goes back to what we talked about. You're putting your claim in the hands of the contractor to negotiate. Nowhere in this provision does it say that they're going to use their best efforts to negotiate and get you as much as possible. It just says, you have a claim, give it to us in 72 hours, we'll pass it to the owner and cross your fingers. As a sub, you'd want to add something like, contractor shall address any pending subcontractor claims before requiring subcontractor to proceed with any work on any new or subsequent claim. What happens as a sub is that you may have change orders and claims, and they start, and then you have another one, and you have another one. And as you saw in other provisions, you have to keep working. You have to keep paying your labor. You have to keep providing material to the job. That gets very expensive as you continue to finance this project. So you want to try to always, whenever you can, put the brakes on and say, and be able to put up your hands to the contractor and say, we agreed that I can stop working until these things get resolved. Because the contractor is always wanting to hold over, no, we got to finish, you're going to be late, we're going to delay the job. So provisions like this are helpful to slow the contractor down. This is similar to the stop work provision we talked about. If you're not paid within a certain amount of time, you can stop working. Again, the goal is to slow down the pace of the work until the issues that are important to you get resolved.
This episode is brought to you by CPVC FireSprinklerReport.com. With recent lawsuits alleging that CPVC fire sprinkler pipe is defective, contractors, subcontractors, and suppliers now have a place to get accurate and up-to-date information. Visit CPVC FireSprinklerReport.com to learn the latest and protect your company.
All right, let's talk about bonds and insurance. If you as a contractor have to bond the job, I strongly encourage you to demand that your subs, your significant subs, bond back. That's expensive. Sometimes your surety as a bonded contractor will require that, but it mitigates risk to you that you are absorbing all of the risk on this job, and you could have a sub that fizzles out and you have no recourse. We have a case now where we represent a contractor who has a dispute with an electrician. And this job was a county job, and the job was substantially an electrical job. such that close to, I think, 90% of the job was subbed to the electrician. That's how much of an electrical job it was. My client bonded the job, but did not require the electrician to provide a bond back. That electrician failed to perform, and we defaulted them. So now we have a problem. Now we have a job that where the electrician is defaulted, and we have no direct recourse because that electrician wasn't bonded. So my client had to come out of pocket, finish the job, hire a replacement contractor, which was more expensive. Had the job been bonded, then we would have been able to make a claim against that bonded subcontractor's performance bond. So remember, if you're going to put yourself at risk as a bonded contractor, you want to try to mitigate that risk, and one way to do that is require the important subs on your job to bond back to you. There are, on public jobs, the bond that you issue is going to be what's called an unconditional bond. On private jobs, you can issue a bond that's called a conditional payment bond, and the condition of that payment bond is that that bond is only in play if the owner pays the contractor. So that's another way to minimize your risk on private work as a bonded contractor, is to give not an unconditional bond, but a conditional bond. Now, if you're getting bonds, you want to make sure that the bonds are unconditional. And again, that's the vast majority of bonds that exist are unconditional bonds. You want to make sure that you get a copy of the bond that's signed. That's actually a pretty important thing, because if you don't have the bond, then you don't have anything. We represented a contractor who was building out a radio station, and he signed the contract, and a year went by before the job actually started. And he came to me and he said, "I need to get out of this job. I cannot do this job for this price anymore." And the owner had a hard time getting financing, and that was the delay. But he never changed the price of the contract. And the owner finally gets his financing, and he says, "Okay, we're ready to go. Give me the bond." And thank goodness the client came to me when they did, because my client physically received the bond and was about to give it to the owner. And I told him, absolutely, positively, do not give that bond to the owner. Because if the owner gets that bond, now they have rights under the bond. If they never get the bond, they don't have any rights on that bond. So we were able to negotiate an exit from that contract. But had he given the bond to the owner, the owner would have said, no, you're not getting out of this contract. And if you try to get out of this contract, I'm going to make a claim on your bond, which would have been disastrous for my client. So if you are a contractor and you're going to get bonds from your subs, make sure you actually get the bond. Because if you don't have the bond, you don't have much of anything. You want to make sure that the value of the bond is the same as the value of the contract, which usually happens, but you know, we see it occasionally where they don't match. Remember that the surety's liability is whatever is in the bond. So if you have $1 million contract, but the bond only says $500,000, that's how much liability the surety has. So when you get your contract, one of the things you should do always is you should send a copy of your contract as you are negotiating and reviewing it. You should send it to an attorney, and you should send it to your insurance agent. And the reason you want to send it to your insurance agent is you want to make sure that the insurance obligations that you are agreeing to accept or to provide in your contract, you can actually do. So your insurance agent isn't going to review the contract in its entirety. They're going to review it to make sure that what you are promising to provide is actually insurance that you have coverage for, right? So simple things. It wants a $2 million policy. You only have $1 million. That's a problem. Your insurance agent should identify that for you and say, nope, if you're going to meet this contractual obligation, we need to get you more insurance. Additionally, there's lots of language that exists in the insurance section of the contract, and some of those things may be gaps in your insurance that if you wanted to, you can get riders for. But unless you know that that gap exists, you don't have the ability to fill that gap. That's what your insurance agent should be doing for you. So let's talk about some issues to be aware of with respect to insuring a job. Almost always in the subcontract, it's going to require that the owner and the contractor be listed as an additional insureds under the policy. Pretty standard stuff. You want to verify that through the course of the job, you actually have coverage. When someone gives you a certificate of insurance, it usually lists a period of time for that policy, which is usually a year. Your project may run over that period of time. If so, did you get another certificate of insurance? Contractors that are really on point calendar in advance of when the certificate of insurance is set to expire to make sure that they get another one. And one of the things that they do, the ones that are really on point, is they coordinate that issue with your payment. So sometimes as a sub, you'll show up to get your check and they say, nope, can't give you your check. I need a new certificate of insurance. Those contractors are running a pretty tight ship with respect to their paperwork. If you have a certificate of insurance that has a policy period that has expired, there may be no insurance. You have to be careful. As well, and maybe this is a shock to some of you, but there are insurance certificates floating around South Florida that are completely fake. I'm not sure if you've heard of this. So if you have any doubt that you have a certificate of insurance that's real, what you do is you pick up the phone to the agent that issued the certificate and you ask him to verify that he issued that certificate. We have had clients come to us and they say, can you believe it? We picked up the phone and I asked, and they said, oh yeah, he came in and bought a policy. I issued him 7 certificates and then he canceled the policy. So you now have a certificate that says you have a policy that's good for a year, and that policy is no good because it was canceled and you never got notice of that cancellation. So if you have any doubt that the certificate is good, you need to verify it with the agent.
Thanks for listening to the LeanZone.com podcast. You can subscribe to this podcast on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, or in your favorite podcast app. For articles, videos, and forums on this and other construction topics, head over to the LeanZone.com.